What is up, guys? Welcome to another Homegrow TV talk show and podcast. And today, we're going to be diving into detail with Jason from Dark Horse Genetics on things like the creation of the real Bruce Banner, what he means by fake seeds and the show he has, the ABC of fake seeds, and some really cool general Dark Horse history and future, where they're going, new creations, and Autoflower collaborations. So today's podcast was actually recorded quite a while ago, and it took me quite a bit to get to it. So apologies for the delay. Don't worry, we got tons of Seed to Harvest content coming really soon. And as you can see, we're still at our old house, and really soon, within the next few days, actually tomorrow, we're getting the visit from the ministry and hopefully finally have our license and are able to transition out of this house and into our new licensed property. So yeah, enough about me. That's the update going on here at Homegrow TV. Now, I want to take a quick second and thank the sponsor of this podcast, Pulse Grow. You see, these are the guys that make the monitors that I've been using and loving more and more inside of my tents. Mostly the Hub VWC kit. This is what I've been plugging into my substrate to be able to monitor exactly what my soil moisture is and my dryback on a daily basis, no matter where I am. And it's not only this VWC kit that connects to the hub, but an array of different monitors. Whether you're monitoring pH and EC in your reservoir or feeding tank, VPD, temp, and humidity inside the tent, the guys over at Pulse have you covered. So make sure to check out pulsegrow.com for everything grow room monitoring. Like literally everything. Make sure to use code HomegrowTV at checkout to save yourself a nice chunk of change, and it helps support the channel. Much love and thank you to everyone who's been using that code, and thank you, Pulse Grow, for sponsoring this podcast. Now, let's jump into it. Jason, my man, how you doing, brother?
Excellent, man. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. And the first thing I just want to open this with, bro, growing up with the last name Hulk, what was that like, bro, growing up?
I mean, it could have been a lot worse, I got to be honest. I never was like a big guy. My little brother's way bigger than me. But I was never like a big guy, so I don't know the name necessarily fit. But in a weird way, you write like Hulk on your lunchbox and nobody really wants to steal it or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dude, it's definitely iconic. And especially getting into some of the questions we're going to be diving into with the Bruce Banner and stuff like that. It's obviously fitting and it ties into a lot of the history. But for those listening to the podcast right now, Jason, that don't know who you are or Dark Horse Genetics, let's back up a little bit and dive into your journey getting into breeding and the history of Dark Horse Genetics.
Okay, so I mean, it's a long journey, my cannabis venture, I guess you could say, but Dark Horse Genetics essentially was my third or fourth company. No, it's like my second or third company that I did, but I originally started one of the first dispensaries in all of Colorado, like probably within the first 20 dispensaries of all dispensaries in Colorado on Broadway, before Broadway was what we call the Green Mile in Colorado. Right. So I opened up one of the first stores, and it was called Delta 9 Alternative Medicine. And that store, in the early days of cannabis, you know, where we operated off medical programs and caregiver cards and everything like that, that store kind of had the bad ending where essentially the state required a bunch of nonsense, like shotgun marriages, we call them, vertical integration. It was called HB 1284 or something like that. But essentially they tried to merge all the companies because all the dispensaries sort of had, they were like Pawn Star models where it was like consignment shops and people would bring in cannabis and you would sell it. And granted, okay, we grew cannabis, but we could never grow enough to like supply the store at that time. So we bought tons of cannabis off the street. So that is kind of where I like to start my breeding career, because what I think I'm decent at or makes me a decent breeder is the ability to select strains. And my experience in starting a dispensary and seeing all of the strains kind of come through the shop early on and getting to judge all the pot and then seeing how almost all of the cannabis was supposed to be grown, or what this variety, like what a Durban is or what a Haze is or a real OG. So gotcha. Like that kind of led me to discovering like genetics and picking the best strains for the store. So when that shop ultimately ended, I kind of left cannabis for a few years, and I had an investor kept calling me and he says, I want a horse in this race. And I was kind of burnt out a little bit, and I was like, I don't really want to do the cannabis scene at the moment. The last one didn't end well. So, yeah, I kind of caved to his requests, and that's why we called it Dark Horse Genetics. And when I said, when I want to come back into the into the industry again, where I want to release seeds, do breeding projects, release seeds to the market, and that's the origin of Dark Horse Genetics, for, I guess, those who don't know.
That's beautiful, right?
Sorry, like long-winded, sorry.
No, it's great, and I love it, and that's really what this is for. Like, I think a lot of us, a lot of people in the industry, or new growers, everyone alike, right, have grown or seen, or, you know, seen something around Bruce Banner, right? And we're going to get there. And you have such a big name and so much fame around your work. So really, as much as you can give us here today, Jason, you know, just we're ready. You laid on us. But that leads us perfectly. Like you said something there, one of the skill sets that you developed in your early years was also selecting and sorting out what was fire, what was good. How does that lead into the creation of the oh-so-famous Bruce Banner? I want to definitely, let's talk about Bruce Banner for a second. And how did that lead into that?
So Bruce Banner was actually before the dispensary.
Got you.
I was in college in Missoula, Montana, going to the University of Montana. I was taking marketing and some botany courses. And at that time, I remember strawberry diesel was all the rage on, I think it was Seed Bay. I'm bad with my memory at points, but I think it was Seed Bay or Overgrow, but essentially there was these auctions from Reservoir Seeds, and say what you will about Reservoir, but at that time he was breaking the internet with these seed drops. So I stayed up all night to win this strawberry diesel auction, and at the time I was early in my growing career. I didn't really consider myself a breeder at this time. I was dabbling, I was playing, but I had won this auction. I woke up, the servers, I made my bid, the servers crashed, I had no idea what happened, and I woke up the next morning and turns out in my email it's like you had won that auction. So I made my payment, got those seeds, but I knew these seeds were so valuable at the time to everybody in this cannabis scene. I was like, it's a disservice to just throw away the mails like I typically would do. So when I started these, I had just acquired the real OG Kush. I say real because at that time there really wasn't a bunch of OG Kushes. There was one OG Kush, but I acquired the OG Kush from Boulder, Colorado. I'm actually from Denver. So I was back home. I got the OG Kush. Took it back to college, and I loved OG Kush. It was my number one thing. So when I won this strawberry diesel auction, I was like, I have to hit it to this OG Kush. It's the best plant I have. I'm not going to throw away the males. I'm just going to make a pollination here. And I did multiple different pollinations with multiple different males, really trying to learn the process of breeding. I remember reading a lot of books at that time, too, and my botany studies at college. But I was just very, very into it, and essentially created on one of my first go rounds. I think I had two or three other little side projects under my belt, but one of my first go rounds, I created probably one of the best things that I'll ever create in my life, which is crazy. But I knew it the moment that we get the seed. I started it, and I grew that plant, and I was like, the whole time I'm like, this is fucking incredible. But you kind of question yourself because it's one of your early breeding projects, and you're like, am I just favoring this because I made it? So I didn't really know, and I was early on into like jam band hippie music, so I would go to On the Road to like String Cheese or Yonder Mountain String Band or any of these bands. But I remember String Cheese was at Horning's Hideout in Oregon, so I was in Missoula, so I jaunted up to Oregon to see this concert, and I brought a bunch of this what I called strawberry kush with me, this strain that I'd made, and I passed it around. And this dude from Texas was with us. He was our friend. I can't actually remember his name. He was just kind of hanging on with the group. But he kept calling me, because my last name's Hulk, he kept calling me, or the weed. He goes, where's that Bruce Banner weed? Where's that Bruce Banner weed? So after the weekend was over, the strain was coined Bruce Banner, and I knew it was really fucking good because half the festival was trying to figure out who had this Bruce Banner weed. So that's the earliest creation of Bruce Banner. And from there, it sort of springboarded me to get to Denver, to start one of the first shops, to introduce Bruce Banner. And that is kind of where the legend starts, I guess, because we released Bruce Banner in Denver, Colorado on Broadway. And to little fanfare initially, but then this is the craziest thing about cannabis is if it's fire, it starts this roar, this tidal wave of people. And before you know it, you know, our store opened at like 11 a.m., and people would come open, like line up in lawn chairs at 5 a.m. and they would drive 6-7 hours. And I started limiting it to a quarter a person because I didn't want to just sell it all to one guy.
Right. So
it got a little bit crazy. We could never produce enough. But that in itself, I think the limitedness kind of what made it like, you know, if you can't get it, that's all everyone's talking about kind of thing. So that certainly helped to the marketing of the strain, if you will.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think I read online or in part of the story as well, like you guys would do the drops. So it was like on Fridays or every second Friday. So it wasn't all the time, right? And you guys were limited. And that's just like unreal. And so that was my next question. Like, how do you think that the Bruce Banner, the name, that strain got so big? And I love that term. And you brought that up too. Like, as far as we use that a lot, fire, right? And it's almost like it does catch fire and it spreads, man, quicker. Like when that shit lights fire, dude, you know, you're going to catch wind about it. And it's, and it was just like, oh my God, dude, Bruce Banner caught fire. Did it ever? So how, like, lead us through, how do you think that got so international, so big?
I really don't have a great answer. I mean, I was as shocked as the next guy. I really can't quite tell you. I know it was, you know, super good, and I've always thought it was, you know, a great strain. It's our signature strain. But at the same time, I was like, I think if I'm being truly honest, it had to do with the limited number of stores that had opened in Colorado at the time. So you have a handful of stores that are open. A lot of them sucked. So there was two or three shops that actually had really good cannabis in it. And of those, we were one. And then of that, in our store, one particular strain was just better than everything else. And we obviously didn't pass the clone out or anything. It was all cultivated by me and my close friends to be sold back in the store. So that sort of, I think the fact that it was so limited in Colorado, and then that people would like drive from 6, 7, 8 hours and then line up in a lawn chair. And I remember on the drop days, I would come in, and this is early days of cannabis where really it was sketchy. So I didn't ever want to draw attention to myself. The fact that you had a line going down the street really freaked me out. So I would come back and be like, everyone needs to come back at 11 a.m. We'll serve everybody. I gave everyone tickets. So that was kind of a point where I knew the strain was fire in a bottle. But at the same time, I also had a unique perspective of how I wanted to release the strain to the world. We essentially kept it in-house for 2 years. And I always said, after 2 years, we'll release this to the general public. So I think that built some of the hype too, is like, it's coming, eventually we'll be able to get this. And after 2 years, I released it to the general public. I think it was like $50 a cut to the general public and 1,000 to dispensaries wholesale that they could then grow. And that's when I really knew something was going to happen here, because the line just to get the cut was massive. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to go far and wide from here. But I do recall when I saw it at Harborside, I had friends call me and they're like, your cut's in Harborside. I was like, okay, from this point forward, it's probably going to make its way around. But I am genuinely stunned at how far and wide Bruce Banner has traveled the globe. There's people that have, you know, shown me their Bruce Banner pictures from all over the place.
Yeah, right? And it gets and kind of transitions into, also, it was so famous that there was even copies or people falsifying it. And it's been done in certain ways, I would assume, with something so big. Did you notice Bruce Banner being out there before that 2 year gap, before you actually released it to the public?
Not so much in the early 2 year gap. What kind of happened was, is Bruce Banner won a huge award from High Times, which obviously really launched me and put me on the map on like a global stage. But Bruce Banner won High Times Strongest Strain on Earth, and they put it on the front cover. And holy, I framed shit. That and put it down, and you know, I framed that one and put it in the entryway of my home, because that one kind of built my life. But from that point forward, the strain got this lore of being the highest, most high THC strain available, which, you know, it lasted for a few years in High Times realm. I think Chem Dog eventually knocked it off for Strongest Strain on Earth later, a couple of years later, with like another few percents higher. But then High Times stopped kind of doing the award. And it's a strange award. It's not like we won a cup. They didn't give me anything. They just, you know, I think it was an article written by somebody, an annual article written by somebody. But they went to the High Times Cannabis Cup test results from all their different cups, and they would judge, they would say what was the highest THC. And then it also won some award from High Times, which was, I call it an award, but was featured in High Times as the top 10 greatest strains of all time. And it came in at like 6 or 7 or something like that. But things like that really springboarded it into becoming a strain where, before I had ever released a seed or started my own breeding projects with it, I mean, I made the strain, but released the clone or had the phenotype of Bruce Banner 3 and Bruce Banner 5. I had these two phenos, and I hadn't really worked them into genetics too much until about 2014. That's kind of when I decided to start breeding Bruce Banner back cross and release the seed. But there was Bruce Banner seed all over the place before I'd ever released a seed. So that kind of, I don't want to say like spurred me to do it, but it sort of wanted me to get in front of that nonsense because it's just a lucrative strain. When a strain becomes like lore, like Gorilla Glue or Blue Dream or OG Kush or something, I'm not necessarily putting Bruce Banner in those categories, but when it starts becoming like a legendary cannabis strain, before you know it, there's, you know, fake versions of it everywhere, which is highly complimentary and I'm very flattered, but it's also somewhat maddening at times.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's actually a great decision for you to springboard and do that because you have a lot of new growers getting into the space every single day, right? And someone gets a new, they read up on history, they read up on their articles, and then it's available from X company, and it's not actually from Dark Horse. It's not from the actual breeder, right? Or it's not the real Bruce Banner. So this is actually a great transition into why I really wanted to make this podcast happen, because I had stumbled upon the ABCs of fake seeds, right? And I was already, I love your guys' podcast and the show you guys do on YouTube, but you have this, like, you've done part two already, I think. I don't know if you guys have done more, but you have this segment you guys do every now and then. For those listening, definitely check out Dark Horse Genetics on YouTube and their podcast. I think you guys have it on all platforms. But let's segment now into talking about the ABCs of fake seeds. Tell me a little bit about the show and what the heck are fake seeds? What are you guys talking about over there?
So this all starts from a trip to Spanibus. I've been going to Spanibus for the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. And I remember going to one of my first times going to Spanibus and kind of walking through, and I would see a ton of essentially booths that were dedicated to American strains. Like there'd be a whole booth for Gorilla Glue seeds, and there'd be a whole booth for like Bruce Banner seeds. And it was like, what is this? Like this, there's no way this is. So to the little bit of investigation that I kind of was able to figure out relatively easily, that a lot of the seeds in Europe are kind of white label seeds. And what I mean by white label, if you're not familiar, is essentially there's one breeder who wholesales a large amount of seeds to like a distributor, and then the distributor will then change the name of the seeds 5 times and then put it out, or whatever seed may be in demand that's hype in America, they'll just put that name on it and then send it to the trade show and create a whole marketing booth kind of thing around it and just sell a lot of those strains, or they'll knock off the top 10 American strains or whatever they may be, or global strains, whatever's really hot. And right. I saw it, and we always kind of just smirked or whatever. Like I say, we took it as a compliment. And this is something we've seen for years, if you know, amongst the breeding circles. It's like, okay, we know this exists, but I never really wanted to be the guy to call it out, because the ABCs of fake seeds video actually was pretty popular, but at the same time pissed a ton of people off because, you know, it sort of exposing the underworld of seed sales and, you know, large commercial seed sales. And there's essentially two kinds of breeder in the world. There's the smaller, you know, I don't know, almost micro home grower breeder. And then there's these massive large scale breeders that are producing hundreds of thousands of seeds, usually in Spain, places like Spain. And you'll see that these seed will kind of get distributed all over the world in places. Even in Spain, there's literally, you know, it's not illegal to run a seed store in Spain. So there's seed banks as a storefront. You walk in and it has, you know, fake Bruce Banner, fake Gorilla Glue. I call them fake because the odds are they did not at all come from any of like that original Bruce Banner clone that was so popular in Denver, Colorado back in the day. It was just like, okay, will you try to recreate it by using something strawberry and hitting it to OG, or we'll literally just name change it and call it that for seed sales. And I don't know. I tried to poke fun at it a little bit where it was like, let's just do a little video poking fun at this. And it turned out to be highly educational for a lot of folks. And I don't know, there's some like notorious offenders on there that we sort of highlighted, where it's like these guys use the same pictures or stolen pictures. They'll steal pictures from breeders and then literally slap them on their website, steal the description, change a few words, put it on their website. So I just went through Google and hit, you know, type in Bruce Banner seeds. And ironically, the first 10 pages of SEO on Google was, you know, almost entirely fake versions of Bruce Banner. And I was like, well, let's just highlight this. So we went through and looked at it, and it was all very similar stuff, like the same picture over and over again, the same website rebuilt. So upon a little further investigation, you kind of figure out there's companies like Crop King Seeds, which then, you know, morph into Sunwest Seeds, which also are like, you know, like five or six subsidiary companies, and they're dominating SEO. So that's where they're getting the bulk of their sales come from. But a lot of the genetics aren't true. So when I say fake seed, the seed is almost guaranteed to be a cannabis seed, but it's not the actual genetic that you think. And this contributes to muddying up the gene pool where people are like, oh, well, you're only saying that because you're missing out on some cash. And it's like, that's not necessarily what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when I go to a trade show and people show up with their jar of Bruce Banner and they're so excited to show me, almost 99% of the time it is wildly, you know, some hardcore train wreck sativa or something. And I'm like, I don't want to break your heart, but this isn't Bruce Banner. Let me show you Bruce Banner. And I'll pull out a jar and show it to them. And they'll be like, oh, this is absolutely not this. I'm like, where'd you get this seed? And they'll be like, ILGM or something like that. And that's where it kind of gets muddied up, where it's like, okay, there's a lot of Bruce Banners out there. So someone bought a Bruce Banner seed from Fast Buds and then they start it and bring out the flower and like, here's my Bruce Banner. It's like, this isn't even close to Bruce Banner. So when you talk about strains like Gorilla Glue or Blue Dream or Bruce Banner or stuff like that, a lot of times, even in dispensary shelves, it's not the actual strain. And whether that be through pure like greed and nefarious activity to change the name, or whether it just be pure mistake where the person bought a seed, genuinely thinks they have Bruce Banner, keep the clone, are excited about it, pass the clone out to 20 friends, and before you know it, now there's like a ton of different Bruce Banner cuts floating around that really are not at all related to the original cut.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love this one. I recommend anyone listening to this right now or watching this on YouTube to check it out. I thought it was great, bro, and you made it funny. You bring out something very serious to light, and it actually is it fits into that education category because, like I said, every day we have new growers joining the space, and I think it's just, you know, you also mentioned that video. It's not like, when, you know, they're growing this. It's not like everyone's it's all garbage. Some people might get a nice flower, but it's not the Bruce Banner. It's not the Dark Horse genetics that you've actually created and done. So what do you think, just throwing this on the table, what do you think the ethics are towards getting strains, crossing strains? Like, where does that fine line kind of sit?
I mean, that is kind of a weird fine line between, everyone seems to have a different line in the sand. So it's like a little bit strange, you know what I mean? How people, I guess, consider what's appropriate, what's not at times. But really, I have almost zero reservations with anyone using any of our genetics to make any other genetics. The only thing that gets weird is when you kind of misrepresent it as that exact strain. So it's like, you can use any, if you buy a pack of seeds and you get a male, that is your male to do whatever the hell you want to do with. You can pollinate, you can do all kinds of stuff. It gets a little bit weird when people make S1s of your genetics and try to sell just a feminized version of just straight the strain. I wouldn't say it's like, it's frowned upon, but it's still within, you can do whatever the heck you want to do. But that's the thing. Even when I go back to the ABCs of fake seeds and like saying that's not real Bruce Banner, or to me, I look at it, it's almost like a rite of passage for folks. It's like, okay, if you're new to growing cannabis and the first thing you do is Google cannabis seeds, more than likely you're going to get some bunk seed as far as not really what it is when you order your first order, but you're going to get that experience you need. You're going to learn how to crack a seed, how to germinate a seed, how to finish it, how to harvest dry, all that stuff. And then you're going to, through your desire of growing cannabis, you're going to look further and go deeper, and you'll start to figure out, oh, Bruce Banner was actually made by so-and-so, or Gorilla Glue was actually made by these guys. So you kind of try to hunt it down. But to more direct to your question, as far as what is the line, I don't really think that there necessarily is a line. It's more, don't copy the exact name. The name is more the thing, and that's where it's like, if when you start to say, well, this is Bruce Banner 2, or this is also Bruce Banner, it's like, well, call yours something slightly different, and everything's fine. But a lot of times, these guys don't call things different. They just call it, you know, Bruce Banner, so it totally, or Bruce Banner number 3. So it totally confuses you when a company like White Rhino or something has a feminized Bruce Banner 3, and you think, well, I'm just going to get the number 3 as opposed to the original Bruce Banner from Dark Horse. And it's like, so it gets muddied up a little bit.
Definitely, but, man. You're like, how does everyone have Bruce Banner 3? you know, this clone only, you know, what's going on? How does everyone rocking this? So I thought that was great, man. And you guys handled it well. Is that show going to continue? Is that something you guys are going to feature every now and then on the podcast?
It seemed like people like the ABCs of Fake Seeds, like the general audience like the ABCs of Fake Seeds. So yeah, we may continue. We did a part two where we kind of featured Skittles and we kind of talked about, let's Google Skittles and see who, you know, who is the original creator of Skittles and where can you get Skittles' actual genetics? And then we went down the list of all the thing, and it was ironic that it was almost the same repeat offenders of the original ABCs of Fake Seeds. Right. So it may become a recurring series. And but there is one thing I want to stress about it is, particularly on the Bruce Banner, it's like, it's hard even for a guy like me, the original creator of Bruce Banner, to look at the list and be like, I can't say so-and-so didn't get the original cut from someone and breed it and make something. So it's like, I'm not saying anything crossed with Bruce Banner in the world is fake. What I'm saying is, you know, people saying they have Bruce Banner 3 seeds and, you know, all over the internet. Essentially, this is the one trick you need to look for. If it's a clone only, and I'm sure the audience is familiar with a clone only, but if it's a clone only name, a wedding cake, a, you know, a Bruce Banner 5, 3, Gorilla Glue 4, it's like, or Skittles, it's like, you're not going to have that in seed form. You can S1 it potentially, but it's not going to be in seed form. So when you see a seed company have all the hottest genetics that are female clone onlys, you should be skeptical, because it's highly unlikely that they're going to have these in seed form, you know, with 3 months after the strain got hot.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. And I think you absolutely nailed it with that. And other than that, like, how do growers ensure that they're actually getting the real thing? You know, and again, even talking beyond Bruce Banner, someone's a fan of X strain. What do you recommend for all growers new and experienced? What's the best way for those to make sure that what they're getting is actually quality and what they're actually hoping for?
The best thing you can do is try to hunt the original source or get as close to the original source as you can. And a lot of times that just requires a little bit of research. So if you get on some of these forum sites, even social media, some of these guys are, you know, email some of the more reputable companies that will generally point you to the way of who made so-and-so strain. But just ask who made this strain, who is the original breeder of this strain. And if you go that route, you'll get as close to the source as you can. And as I say, I would just do questions, ask a lot of questions, do a little bit of research. And generally, you can get pointed to the right way. But I think most people start with just a simple Google search. And then I'm not even sure how they're not confused when they see the same strain listed 100 times across, you know, 20 websites. It's like, well, which one is the right one? But a lot of people, again, sort of think that cannabis seed is cannabis seed. And that could lead you into trouble.
Right. Or this, like, this gut feeling, like, you know, something's off. Is it all kind of a facade and a fake thing? Are we ever going to get the real deal? Where everyone just kind of jumping into different names. So that's why I think conversations and interviews like this are important. And that's why I love your guys' podcast and what you guys are doing over there. We've talked a lot about Bruce Banner. I honestly, one day, I've got to run the real Bruce Banner, bro. And we got to do that sucker down here. I'm based here out of Columbia, originally from Canada. But that's something I would love to take from seed to harvest. That's what we specialize in and love to do here on the channel. So that's something that we're adding to the list and is on the list to get something here from Dark Horse Genetic and Test. But beyond the Bruce Banner, what are some other crosses and things that you've created that you're proud of and different flavors that you'd like to highlight?
Sure. I mean, I was actually just looking at it this morning, just out of curiosity. I think I'm somewhere over like 45, 50 releases at this point, which is pretty surprising to me.
Awesome.
Granted, a lot of those were sort of small, limited release, sort of one-off things that we put out just for fun. But some of our more signature strains, I would say, though, is we have a Savage Hulk, which is sort of my three favorite cannabis strains together, which is Bruce Banner, the 5, Skittles, and Do-Si-Do. So I put those in a polyhybrid cross, and I was like, the stuff that comes out of there is just ridiculous. I get these crazy candy, purpley fume kind of terps, and I love it. We've F2'd that one in process of F3'ing it, but I continue to work the Savage Hulk because I really like it. Ghost Hulk, you'll see a theme amongst my names or strains. Is a lot of it has to do with comic book characters or different variations of the Incredible Hulk. Anyone that's in the comic world will probably recognize some of the names. But Ghost Hulk is another strain that 710 Labs, which is a very, you know, well-respected company in North America, they feature in their hash department, their washing. And Ghost Hulk is phenomenal. It's one of those almost like Bruce Banner that continues to live on because of the work 710 does with it. It's one of right. their like best Percy hashes that they put out. So people seem to love Ghost Hulk. Strawberry Shortcake was another strain that did really well. Thanos, which is a cross that we made.
I was looking at that one today, actually.
It's basically Skittles to Bitch Slap, and Bitch Slap is a strain that I made mainly for breeding purposes, but it's a kosher to OZ Kush. So you got a ton of Z going on in there, and when you pop the Thanos, you get Skittles Crazy Phenos, and I like it a little bit better than straight Skittles in the sense that you get more seed vigor, easier to clone, better yield, but a lot of times there's just crazy good Skittles Phenos coming out of there. So you can tell I'm a big fan of OG, Strawberry, Skittles. I kind of like those fruitier turfs, but I also like the gas in the back end, and I'm like high THC. But I'll say the last strain I'll throw out there is in the short list is probably Roid Rage. Roid Rage is a huge hash monster. It washes, you know, upwards of 6-7%. And people are finding just huge colas, you know, huge, like almost no like inner node. It's just all nug. So Roid Rage is one that's, you know, I've not really been able to keep in stock also. And that's another Bitch Slap cross. So we were able to find a few really killer phenos that we were able to utilize in that kosher OZ cross and have an amazing male. But every time we hit it, we just come up with like huge yield monsters. So, I was surprised that I actually have a ton of different crosses. And I went to my retired catalog too, and I was like, man, even myself was somewhat surprised. I was like, we've been doing this for a minute. There's a history of genetics, and looking back over it all, I was like, you know, there's some stuff in here that I'd like to go backwards and play with again. So
I was just going to ask you,
might be new. Yeah.
Right. No doubt. Yeah. With that, because I know on your guys' website, you go and you see the, you know, the past launches and everything that aren't. I assume you obviously all have seed stock and you have that in the bank and everything. Is that something you're thinking about maybe at some point diving back through and looking through again?
I have this cut. I had it for like 23 years. It's Juliet number 3. And that's another one that actually got popular here in Colorado, sort of like Bruce Banner number 3. But I initially offered it out of that first dispensary. And before you knew it, that cut went everywhere. But Juliet is an NYC diesel to a Sandy 99 cross. And it comes from the forums from a guy named John Lee Pettimore. And he passed out tons of free seeds. Although he was one of the only guys that was like Johnny Appleseed. If you just hit him up on the forums back in the day, and I'm talking 20 years ago, he would pass out all these seeds. So he sent me this Juliet, and it was like the fruitiest. It's kind of got a longer internode length, but it's got the fruitiest kind of candy flavor to it. And I love this cannabis. I love this strain. And I just literally set it down, and I don't think I've touched it for like years. But I still have it, and I'm like, you know what? We have got to start working Juliet. And it's a strain we made Cherry Wonka with. It's a strain we made Strawberry Shortcake with. Yeah. But whenever I add it to it, it definitely brings the strawberry. And I think that I've talked myself into it a little bit, because as much as I'm over the dessert tray of cannabis, which is kind of everything now, I'm also like, I have some unfinished business with this Juliet. It's still not done. I feel like have to keep working it a little bit. But if you ever see Juliet 3 in any of our lineages, that's one that you should probably take a look at, because it's going to bring the strawberry. It's going to bring the flavor.
Oof, that's beautiful, bro. Yeah, thanks for throwing that one on. I'm going to keep my eyes out on for that one. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I would love to hear a little bit more, because it's a conversation we see more and more talks about, is autoflowers. And I know you guys are in works and doing a collaboration with Night Owl, right? And it's called Dark Owl. I know very little about it. Can you fill us in a little bit about what you guys are working on over there?
Absolutely, man. I've been blessed to become friends and colleagues with Daz from Night Owl Seeds. And I was like, why don't we release a Bruce Banner auto? So that kind of led to the creation of Dark Owl Autos, which is Dark Horse and Night Owl together to create essentially bringing new genetics or sort of famous clone onlys that I've worked with or that we've made and putting them back into auto form. So we started working on like a King Louis and a Wedding Cake and a Marathon OG and a Bruce Banner. And we put out the Bruce Banner and the Marathon to, you know, a pretty rave reviews off of it. I was actually stunned off that too. So I was like, you know, these guys really, this auto world, it opened up a whole new like avenue for me where I was like, man, this auto thing, there's really something here. And to be honest, I got to be really honest, I thought autos were pure shit. I really thought it was low rider crap, you know, 2-3 inch just hay tasting 5% THC hemp. And I was like, I don't want it. Like, autos are shit. I will never fuck with autos. Then I met Daz from Night Owl. And then he started showing me flower that he had grown. And I couldn't tell at all that it was an auto flower. Then I saw him grow a batch of autos. And they were 3-4 foot monster cola. And I'm like, doesn't look like an auto flower. And then I started breeding autos with him. And I started recognizing the dedication. I believe it takes more skill because you have to go 4 generations to identify, you know, a fully fem auto flower seed that you start with from a photo period. It just takes a little bit more skill. It takes a lot longer, but it's really rewarding to do it right. So I've just been, like I said, we've only done a few releases. We're kind of planning on just peppering out a seed, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 seeds here every now and again. And it's not going to be either one of our like direct focuses, but we have the ability to kind of do a little side projects where I'll do the F1, he'll do the F2, I'll do F3, he'll do the F4, and then we'll put it out. So we're sort of trying to throw the work back and forth to each other. And so far, it's worked really well.
I love that. That's such a cool way to collab, too. For one to handle the F1, you know, take it to the F2, go back and forth. How much more work is it really, like, for diving through, you know, creating just feminized seeds or regulars compared to now creating auto flowers?
Well, the thing that I was... I don't want to say stunned about it, or most the trickiest part, I would say, is essentially in the F2 version, because in the F2 version, only 25% of the flower or the seeds are going to show auto flower traits.
Okay.
So you have to start a large selection pool to then look for not only just the ones that are showing auto flower under 24 hours of light. And then from there, you have to make your selections for what you want to work with moving forward. So the F2, I think, is a little bit trickier. Get your selections right. Once you get your selections right, then you move forward. But the thing with autos is there's no clones. You don't recreate anything exactly again. So it's challenging to keep the line straight, stupid fire. But that's all comes down to your selections, generally at the F2 process, because at F3, now you're working on, you know, getting it into feminized. And then F4, you're releasing it. So it's basically uniform, stable, feminized auto flower, which something like, you know, a Bruce Banner we started with was, you know, purely a photo plant. So it's that's why I say you get a lot of rewarding, or if it's very rewarding to do, but it takes a lot longer. It takes, like I said, it's, you know, 4 generations.
What would be like a good selection, or like how much, like, do you guys work with, let's say, when you're doing your first round of selection or one of these rounds of selection?
When we're starting on like an F1 or something, I would generally say we start around 50 to 70 seeds to kind of just look for the stuff that we're going to start on the F1 side. But then when you get to F2, you want to start upwards of 200 sometimes, just to make sure that you can get 50 or so that are actually showing you the auto. And then from there, you can make your selections to move forward. But it's also growing auto flowers, you're throwing away it, or breeding auto flowers, you're throwing away a ton of stuff, because 75% of your plants at F2, you can't even use. They're photo still.
Wow. Oh, my God. Now I get what you're talking about. Now, because only 25% of those now in F2 are going to give you that kind of feature that you even want to hunt through. So even just 200 right there, you're really just hunting through a quarter of those. Unreal. And so that's definitely something that gets you kind of excited, just working with that. And that's something that you guys are going to continue to do and collab here over the next little bit, just launching things here and there.
Oh, absolutely. I just like to shout out Daz once again. Like I say, like I wouldn't know my ass or my elbow in this stuff if Daz didn't literally guide me along the way and kind of show me exactly what needs to happen, in what order, how to do it. And I have a hard-headed brain that's stuck on 12 and 12, these autos. Right. That, you know, autos are determined a lot by the pot size, not the photo period. So it's like if you put them in a small pot, they'll flower immediately. If you put them in a large pot, they'll veg longer. So it's just, it's backwards thinking for my brain, because I've been doing just straight regular seed, some feminized seed, but now getting to auto flowers, it's a new challenge and it's fun. And like I say, it's really cool to take something that is fire in itself, just as a, you know, a clone only, and then send it into an auto flower. By the time you get to F4, you have, should have a uniform version of that photo, or close as you can get to it. And, now it's just in the auto flower process, which is really cool too, because auto flowers are, I believe, eventually going to be, you know, taking more and more market space. It's something where eventually it'll probably be on the shelves at Home Depot. and all the the moms and pops will be buying them for their vegetable garden and stuff, and they'll be throwing 3 to 5 of them out, and they don't want to buy a seed that doesn't auto bloom. You know, they don't want to have any sexing involved. They don't want to deal with any of that. They just want to be able to plant a seed. So you think about a pot that you could literally put in a windowsill, and it'll produce no matter what the hell you do to it, as long as you give it some water. And granted, it'll be probably 6 to 8 inches tall if you put it in a small little windowsill pot. But it's kind of a cool concept where autoflowers will probably take over the cannabis seed world in the next 10 years, in my opinion.
Wow. So not only the, my grandma may be thinking about this, but you're thinking also like good home growers, people that are loving to crank out fire are also going to be playing with more autoflowers, you would predict, within the next decade.
I think, honestly, I think that commercial cannabis will lean more towards autoflowers too, because they can plant them in a field. They can get multiple crops a year in one summer. They don't need to light dep it. You don't have to drag, deps over or anything like that. But in my personal opinion, the fire photos and FIMs and all that, I think that'll remain in the home grow world. Like, people will still grow autos. I guarantee you there's a huge auto base on Reddit and everywhere else that literally will probably dispute this, but as I'm saying, like, I do believe though that you'll probably see those special clone onlys be maintained more at home than you will like the large scale nurseries or farms that are going to be putting out 50,000 seed.
So more like the crop. Connoisseurs, small home growers, those who want to keep those those hunts. And I think those hardcore, like the genetic nerds. I don't think we'll ever disappear. Keeping these things, crossing
things.
They'll
always be there. Yeah.
Right. Even the sativa nerds or the land race nerds, they're never going anywhere. They're gonna love. I get questions all the time being in Colombia for, if we got a good Punta Rojo or a good lead on something like that. So I absolutely love it. And there is just so many areas, directions, and flavors to jump into. And that is a really cool project. And I'm glad to hear your passion, like your excitement around it. Gets me excited to start looking more in that direction. But what other things, whether it's crosses, projects, collaborations that you guys over at Dark Horse are working on in the next little bit?
One thing I kind of want to shout out, actually, is we threw this contest of 2019. We called it the 100K Grand Prix. And it was the first year that we tried it, but I really have this desire to make this Cannabis Cup event that is sort of like the World Series of Poker, where you have like pocket cameras and you can kind of see what's going on at the table when the judges are smoking, and then you have a virtual scorecard where you can kind of see how the judges scored it live on the internet. You can watch it, and it's like a bracket head-to-head, like March Madness. So we kind of stream the entire thing. But the idea also is as much as I love High Times and their trophies and winning cannabis awards and cups and everything else, it's like not a stage where I see golf tournaments and American Express and them giving, $100 million to winning a golf tournament or something. And it's like, why does commercial cannabis, or not even commercial, why does cannabis not have any high stakes cannabis or cash prize tournaments? There really isn't anything for just raw cash, who wants to come down and win some big money, which I thought would attract some, real good growers. But it's kind of a oxymoron because a lot of the best growers in the world don't really want to be known. They're kind of hype. But the idea is this December, we're going to bring it back because we did it in 2019. It was actually pretty successful. We got the contest up to $30,000 cash prize. And the goal, obviously, is $100,000 cash prize. But it was a $30,000 cash prize, which I believe was the largest cannabis cash prize tournament in the history of cannabis.
No doubt.
I think it may have been top recently. But we want to really get that up to 100K. So this year we're bringing it back. We had the pandemic in 2020, so I shut it down for a couple of years, but it hasn't really left my heart. I really want to bring it back. And this year we're going to do it again in Las Vegas, December 1st through the 3rd. It's right after MJ BizCon. And essentially it's anybody who wants to compete can come down and compete. We need 196 people. We have, 50 or so signed up at this point.
That's sick.
But yeah,
what we need about categories, flower?
Just flour. Well, I'm sorry. We're going to have flour and hash at this point. And again, you can bring any flour you want. It's not, there isn't indica sativa. There isn't, it's just show up with 2 ounces of flour, $500.
Yeah.
And you're in to compete in this round robin tournament, a 3-day tournament, winner take all cash prize. And then we're also going to do one on the hash side. So that one will be just 1 ounce of hash and $500, and it's winner take all. When I say winner take all, we're not touching the prize money. It literally right. goes back to the winner. So the second place is the first loser. So the yep. idea is we want to kind of set the cannabis world on fire with a new kind of cannabis event where it's streamed live. You can watch the entire process. Anyone can kind of show up and compete. And the winner walks out with $100K. I mean, it'll be a big fake, you know, check. But right. at the same time, I'm going to send them a wire transfer for $100K the next day. And that's the idea sick. Is that we're going to create this crazy contest that sort of takes over and changes the game of how cannabis contests work. And yeah, so I would like to shout that out, 100kgrandprix.com. If anyone's interested in entering this year, you're more than welcome. We'll take anyone from home growers to grow pros to heck anybody yeah. in between. So oof. If you think you have, you know, decent cannabis and 2 ounces and $500 and you want to come down and throw it down with 196 other people, one person's going to walk away with all the cash.
That is sick. I'll make sure I throw that up on the screen as well. Like much of the stuff that we've been talking about here throughout the podcast, but what's the direct website again for that?
It's 100K Grand Prix. So 100K Grand Prix. Sounds like a race, but it's not a race.
It's sick, man.
Also, I wanted to shout out or throw in there real quick. If you enter, you also are a judge. So if you enter, you then sit in the room, and it takes about a four-hour process as we go round by round. It's blind. We make you put your cell phone in a bag in your pocket so you can't see the live stream. You don't know what strain is yeah. what. And then if you – the judges are the – or the competitors are the judges themselves. So if you sick. Enter, you come down and you judge. And it's a unique way to do it because it – granted, it might not be the best way to do a cannabis cup, but in my experience of doing these cannabis cups and all the ones I've been to, it's the best way to get to the top, like top four, maybe top eight in the room. And then from there, like I say, once we get to the final four, we'll kind of bring in a VIP judging panel that will right. kind of award the winner. But the idea is we kind of narrow it down by using the competitors themselves to smoke it. And yep. It actually works very well.
That is sick. That's a really, really smart idea. I love the whole thing, bro. Anything you need from Home Grow TVs, and bro, any way we can help contribute, definitely with sharing the message. We will also, I believe, be at MJ BizCon as well.
I'm going to have you come cover it, man. Yeah, you can go live, everything. Yeah, we want you to be a part of it. Absolutely, dude.
That would be sick, bro. So I'll make sure we stay in touch on that. And definitely everyone be checking that out on the website. And I will be loud about that and be sharing that as much as possible. I love the cups, man. I go to a lot here being in Colombia. It's really cool because it's like the laws here are awesome. They allow us to do cups. There's almost one every single month. There's, you know, where we're actually all the gardeners are sharing, you know, their flowers together. And it's really like this kind of collab in a sense where we get to, you know, what have you been growing, tips and tricks, you know, kind of just share different phenos and things that are going. So I just love the scenes and the competitiveness within the cannabis industry is never like, at least here, it's never been bad to the other person, but it's been a nice competition in the sense of like, oh man, you know, if someone has a better feeling, you know, all the respect or the different grow techniques, you want to learn and absorb as much as you can. So I would just love to be in that energy, in that area, bro, as you guys do that. I think that would be absolutely unreal.
I will say year one, I was nervous a little bit. Like, do I need security? Is people going to be mad when they lose their money? And like, how's this going to go down? But it was the best time ever. And everybody that attended was like, please do this again. This was so fucking cool. And yeah. that to me was like the pilot. It's actually on our YouTube channel. It's the very first video I ever put up on YouTube. It is not edited at all. It's raw, horrible kind of footage. But if you want to go see real. Like the concept of what I'm putting together, which was going to get better each year. And as we get bigger and bigger corporate sponsors, I mean, I think it'd be crazy to someone to win $1 million for growing cannabis. You know, I just
that
need
would be sick.
Fucking, yeah. I don't even know, some, you know, Toyota right? or somebody to come give me a bunch of money they want to put in marketing towards cannabis contests.
Dude, yeah, the idea is there. You're right. The market's here. The growers are there. And, dude, the idea is amazing, bro. Yeah, definitely count on us for any support you need on that whatsoever. For everything else, Dark Horse Genetics, bro, where else can the viewers find you?
Check us out at darkhorsegenetics.com. We're on Instagram, which is just Dark Horse Genetics, one word. I think there's another page in there, but yeah, just go to the main page, which is Dark Horse Genetics, or I'm just Dark Horse Genetics, one word. Also, the seeds, we're on several seed banks all over the place.
Nice.
But probably work closely with, most closely with the seedbazaar.com. So if you want to go there, it's probably the most direct way to get an order from us. But yeah, check out the seedbazaar.com.
And, perfect.
Dark Horse Live every Wednesday, usually. We do a live every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. most of the time we try to make them somewhat informative and fun. Sometimes they're just ridiculous. But
Dude, they're always awesome. I love it, man. And it is. It is good content for those looking for more podcasts and stuff to hang out. It's real talk. And that's what I love about it. You guys have no filter. You have no certain agenda other than just sharing information, bro. And you bring out great guests. You have great talks. So, you know, even just here before this, I had one on in the background and I was loving everything I was hearing, bro. So I'll make sure we have all the links in the description down below, guys. Please throw down a comment and share this video with the Grow Bro that needs to hear this. That is going to find value in this podcast. Sharing the messages, one of the best things you guys can do to help share the love and get this amazing, you know, message out to the world. So, Jason, Mr. Hulk, thanks again, brother, for coming out on the podcast, dude. I look forward to meeting you in person, hopefully one day soon, dude.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah, anytime. Like I say, we got to go tit for tat on this one. We got to bring you on Dark Horse Live now.
But, that would be sick. Yeah,
absolutely, dude. I appreciate you bringing me on. Anytime you want to have a little conversation, let's do it.
Awesome. All right, fam. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Much love, and we'll see you guys next week on Homegrow TV.